Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to unpack the tech that really powers, well, everything these days. Think about the biggest services out there, cloud stuff, IoT, all those apps. They handle just insane amounts of data, millions of users, right? And they need it all instantly, like millisecond response times, always on. How does that even work? Because the way we used to build things, those traditional blocking methods, they served us well, yeah, but now they're hitting a wall, seriously struggling with these modern demands. It's like trying to juggle 1,000 things at once. And this isn't just theory. Developers feel this pain every day.
Absolutely. It's a very real bottleneck. And that's exactly where reactive programming comes into the picture. It's a genuinely different way to build systems. Systems that are way more adaptable, yeah. You know, more resilient, efficient, especially when things get crazy busy. It's a fundamental shift, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. I keep hearing about reactive programming in Java specifically. It seems like it's everywhere now. So I'm excited to actually like get into it today, understand the core ideas, why it matters for big enterprise projects, basically figure out how you can use it. That's our mission for this deep dive. Ready to jump in? Okay, so let's unpack this first. Why are our traditional methods hitting that wall? What are the specific pain points?
Right. So if you've worked with traditional Java, you know the deal. It struggles with lots of simultaneous users and heavy I.O. Think database calls, network requests. Each request grabs a thread, right? Yep. And that thread, it just sits there waiting. It might be waiting for a database query, an API call, whatever. So much of its time is just idle waiting. This means tons of context switching, wasted CPU cycles. Mm. It's just not efficient for these kinds of workloads. And when the load ramps up, you need huge thread pools, yeah. Which means tons of memory for every single connection. And you're just adding more threads, more memory. It scales linearly, which gets incredibly expensive and complicated really fast. The key takeaway here isn't just that they struggle, it's why. That core design choice, one thread per task until it's done. That's the bottleneck in today's world.
Yeah, I can picture that. Systems are just getting choked, thread pools maxed out, everything slows down. So, okay, that's the problem. What is reactive programming actually doing differently then? How does it solve this?
Okay, so at its core, reactive programming is, it's a declarative way to handle asynchronous data streams. Think of data not as single points, but as a continuous flow. Events happening over time. A user click, a sensor reading, a message. And the key idea is propagation of change. When something happens in the stream, anything depending on it automatically reacts. You don't manually push updates everywhere. And crucially, it's built on an event-driven model. Components don't wait around, flocking each other. They just emit events. Other parts of the system observe these streams and react when something new comes along. They set up listeners, basically, callbacks. So the system isn't halted, waiting. It can do other stuff while it waits for the next event. That's how you get non-blocking behavior.
Wow, okay. That is a fundamental difference. So this wasn't just invented yesterday, right? It has some history.
Oh yeah, definitely. It has roots in academia, in functional reactive programming, or FRP. And practically, it came from libraries like Microsoft's Reactive Extensions RX for .NET. These ideas got refined and sort of codified in the Reactive Manifesto back in 2014. That laid out four key traits for building these robust systems. They need to be responsive, quick, consistent replies. Resilient, keeps working even if parts fail. Elastic scales up and down easily. And message-driven, using asynchronous messages to achieve all that. It's really a blueprint for modern software.
A blueprint. I like that. So if that's the blueprint, what are the building blocks, the core concepts we need to grasp?
The absolute foundation is the relationship between observables or publishers and subscribers or observers. The observable is the source. It emits the stream of events. The subscriber is what consumes those events. It kind of asks for the data when it's ready. Mm. And that leads to something really critical, back pressure management. This is huge. Think about it. You might have a super fast sensor spitting out data, say 100 times a second, like a fire hose. But maybe the database on the other end can only write like 10 records per second. It's much slower. Without back pressure, the fast producer just swamps the slow consumer. You get buffer overflows, crashes, disaster. Reactive systems let the consumer signal upstream, basically say, whoa, slow down, or okay, I can take 10 more now.
Hold on. So the slow part can actually tell the fast part to throttle back? That sounds incredibly useful.
Exactly. It's a game changer for stability. The producer can then buffer, or maybe drop data smartly, or just pause. It prevents the whole system from collapsing under load. And this non-blocking approach, combined with back pressure, it's what gives you that huge boost in UI responsiveness and overall system throughput. It really does change how you design things.
Okay, that makes the what much clearer, but how does this really stack up against the traditional ways we've always done things? Let's put them side by side.
All right, let's compare. First, performance. Traditional holds threads, waits, gets bogged down by I/O. Good for CPU-heavy stuff, maybe. Reactive, non-blocking I/O. A few threads handle tons of clients. It absolutely shines with high concurrency, things waiting on networks or disks. Then, resource utilization. Traditional needs big thread pools, lots of memory per user, especially under load. Reactive uses way fewer threads, often a small, fixed pool. And back pressure keeps memory usage bounded, much more efficient.
And that efficiency must directly translate to scalability, right?
Yeah.
Handling more users without just throwing more servers at it.
Precisely. Traditional scaling often means adding more servers, more threads, costs go up linearly. It gets messy in distributed systems.
Mm.
Reactive lets you handle way more connections on the same hardware.
Mm-hmm.
It supports elastic scaling, fits microservices perfectly. And what's really fascinating here is the cost angle. You're scaling efficiency, not just capacity. Those sudden traffic spikes, less terrifying, more manageable. You avoid massive over-provisioning. Now, complexity. This is a trade-off, gotta be honest. Traditional code is familiar. Debugging seems straightforward, linear, but managing concurrency safely in traditional code, locks, race conditions, that gets really hard really fast. Reactive demands a shift in thinking, pipelines, asynchronous flows. It's different.
Yeah.
And debugging can be trickier. Errors might happen deep in a chain. The stack trace might not tell you the whole story immediately. You have to trace the stream logic.
Yeah, where did this error really start? Problem. So different strengths. What about ideal use cases for each?
Traditional is still fine for simpler apps, maybe batch jobs, things that are mostly CPU bound, less concurrency. Reactive is built for real-time streaming, event processing, IoT data, high traffic APIs, microservices, anything needing responsiveness and efficiency at scale. And finally, the developer learning curve. Traditional Java is familiar, sure, but mastering its concurrency is tough. Reactive definitely means learning new APIs, Reactor's Flux Mono, RxJava's observable, flowable, and thinking in streams. It's a shift. But the modern libraries have really fluent APIs. They guide you. It's learnable, and the payoff is huge. These differences are fundamental.
Okay, those comparisons are stark. So digging into Java specifically, why pick Reactive for your next Java project? What's the big deal for enterprise apps?
It's really moved into the mainstream for Java, especially for those big distributed systems, microservices, streaming platforms. It tackles the pain points head-on that you hit when building large-scale Java apps today. The biggest win is enhanced scalability. We touched on this, but it's worth hammering home. Same hardware, more users. That's the promise. A standard Java server might need thousands of threads for, say, 10,000 connections. Memory usage goes through the roof. A Reactive server, it might handle that with just a handful of threads because of non-blocking I/O. That's non-linear scaling. Huge cost savings, better resource use.
Massive efficiency gain there. And what about performance for those common async tasks like calling other services?
Yeah, performance gets a big boost for any asynchronous workload. Think microservices calling each other, talking to databases, hitting external APIs, or data pipelines, reading from message queues. Anywhere your application spends time waiting, Reactive can make it more efficient and responsive. It's also a fantastic fit for event-driven architectures. If you're building on message queues like Kafka or streaming platforms, or even complex UIs with lots of real-time updates, live dashboards, stock tickers, social feeds alerting systems, collaborative apps, these naturally map to Reactive streams of events flowing through the system.
You mentioned errors earlier and how debugging can be tricky, but how does Reactive handle errors in these async flows? Traditional try-catch feels straightforward.
That's a great question, because error handling in async code is historically a nightmare. That lost context, the fragmented stack trace. Reactive libraries like Reactor or RxJava treat errors differently. They're first-class citizens in the stream. An error is just another type of signal the stream can emit. So instead of try-catch blocks scattered everywhere, you define error handlers declaratively on the stream itself. You can say, if an error happens here, do this. Return a default value, switch to a backup stream, log it and move on, maybe retry.
Mm.
It makes handling errors in complex asynchronous chains much cleaner and more robust. You build resilience right into the flow.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So practically speaking, for businesses, when does this make solid business sense? When is the ROI clear?
Several key scenarios jump out. First, anything needing high concurrency and low latency. If delays cost you money or users think online trading, big e-commerce sales events, multiplayer games, Reactive is designed for that, giving responses fast under pressure. Second, anything involving real-time data or streaming. We talked about dashboards, analytics. If your business relies on seeing and reacting to data as it happens, Reactive is the natural choice for processing those streams efficiently.
What about companies expecting massive growth, the next unicorn?
Absolutely. For systems needing extreme scalability, If you anticipate huge, maybe unpredictable user-grade global services, Cloud Platform's Reactive builds that scalability in from the start. It helps you avoid hitting a scaling wall later and needing a painful, expensive re-architecture. And related to that, it's often the answer when traditional systems are already failing to scale. If you see the warning signs, maxed out threads, slow responses, constantly adding servers, Reactive offers a path to handle more load efficiently, often on less hardware. And finally, there's a very tangible long-term ROI in cloud and microservices. Efficiency matters hugely there. Fewer instances, less memory, less overhead per request. It directly cuts your cloud bill. Reactive helps you build cost-effective, resource-efficient microservices. It's strategic.
This is super helpful. We've covered the why, the what, the comparisons, but let's make it even more real. So what does this all mean for the real world? Where is Reactive Java actually running today?
Oh, it's powering a lot of things you probably use. Think real-time data dashboards, like live sales stats on an e-commerce site fed by Kafka, pushed to your browser with WebSockets, that's often Reactive underneath, or live notifications and alerts, social media pushes, system monitoring alerts. They need to handle potentially massive bursts. Reactive streams manage that flow smoothly.
Makes sense. What about finance or e-commerce transactions? High-stakes stuff.
Definitely. High-volume transaction processing, stock trading platforms, payment gateways during Black Friday. They need speed and reliability. Reactive pipelines can process those transactions incredibly quickly. Netflix is a famous example. They use RxJava extensively to handle all the complex network calls needed to stream video to millions. It's also huge in IoT and sensor data handling. Imagine smart city sensors reporting traffic flow. Reactive services can ingest that constant stream of data, maybe using Reactor Kafka or MQTT support, process it on the fly, and trigger alerts like congestion ahead.
So much data. And platforms with just massive user interaction.
Right. Social media and messaging platforms. Think about a tweet going viral, that fan out to millions of followers. Reactive models are great for propagating those events efficiently at enormous scale. And in modern microservices, API gateways and aggregators are essential. A gateway often needs to call several backend services to build a single response, like getting user profile, orders, and recommendations. Reactive makes orchestrating those asynchronous calls much cleaner and more efficient. And finally, lots of enterprise event processing pipelines. Companies are using Reactive Streams to process business events, orders, payments, logs continuously for things like fraud detection, analytics, inventory updates. It's replacing older batch processing in many places.
That's quite a list. It really shows the breadth of applications. And you mentioned tools like Reactor Kafka. Clearly, there's a strong Java ecosystem for this. What are the main frameworks people are using?
Oh, the Java ecosystem is incredibly rich here. For the core libraries, you've got Project Reactor. It's from the Spring team, implements the Reactive Stream standard. Its main types are Flux for streams of many items and Mono for zero or one. It's the foundation for Spring's Reactive features. And then there's RxJava, kind of the original gangster for Reactive on the JVM, inspired by .NET Rx. It has types like observable, flowable, single, hugely popular, especially after Netflix adopted it early on. Very powerful.
Okay, those are the core building blocks. What about frameworks for building whole applications, web services, etc.?
Yeah, so you've got Spring WebFlux. That's Spring's fully Reactive web framework built on Reactor. Great for non-blocking REST APIs, WebSockets. There's also Quarkus. It's designed for cloud-native, super-fast startup, low memory. It uses Vert.x and its own Reactive library called Mutiny, very popular for containers and serverless. And Eclipse Vert.x itself is a powerful, lightweight, event-driven toolkit. You can use it standalone, supports multiple JVM languages.
Any others focused specifically on streaming or event-driven stuff?
Sure. Akka Streams, part of the Akka toolkit, is really strong for complex stream processing pipelines. It uses a graph-based DSL, very robust failure handling. We mentioned Reactor Kafka for Kafka integration. There are similar Reactor projects for Redis, RabbitMQ, RSocket, etc. And Ratpack is another lightweight option built on Netty, good for simple, fast, asynchronous HTTP services. So yeah, plenty of mature choices depending on your needs.
Wow. Okay. So it's here. It's well supported. It's solving real problems.
Yeah.
Looking ahead, what's the future for Reactive Java? Just more of the same or are there interesting trends?
It's definitely set for continued growth and deeper integration. One really interesting area is how it interacts with Project Loom and virtual threads in Java. Loom makes writing simple concurrent code easier using a synchronous style, but it doesn't replace Reactive. Reactive libraries offer much richer stream processing operators and, crucially, back pressure, which Loom doesn't really address directly. So the future looks like they'll complement each other. You'll use the right tool for the job. We'll also just see wider adoption in microservices. As systems get more distributed, efficient non-blocking communication between services becomes even more critical. Reactive is tailor-made for that.
What about the developer side? You mentioned debugging could be tricky. Any improvements expected there?
Yeah, that's a key area for improvement. We can expect better tooling and debugging support over time. Things like IDEs visualizing reactive streams better, making it easier to trace logic and pinpoint where errors or bottlenecks occur in those asynchronous chains. That will lower the barrier to entry. And generally, we're seeing increased support across Java frameworks. It's not just Webflux and Spring. Reactive is creeping into Spring Data, Spring Security. Quarkus, Micronaut, Jakarta EE are all boosting their reactive capabilities. It's becoming a standard feature, not an exotic add-on. So that question, should this project be reactive, will become a default consideration for new Java projects. The momentum is strong. It's really solidifying its place.
So wrapping this up, reactive programming in Java, it's clearly more than just a fad. It's a significant shift, right? Requires a different way of thinking, but the benefits,
yeah,
huge.
Exactly. It's about building systems that are fundamentally more resilient, more efficient, ready for modern scale. Hopefully, this deep dive gives you the foundation to start thinking about how it applies to your work.
Absolutely. Reactive Java feels like a core part of modern software engineering now. It's here to stay. So the real question for you, the listener, is how could this reactive approach elevate your next project?